Taming Dan to a paradise city where the girls are green and the grass is pretty.
Yes, pretty grass. Pretty, pretty grass.
You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones, Peter Street, and introducing Aaron Hubbard.
California, whatever, love. California Love.
With Pac and Dre?
Yeah. Yeah,
wow,
good stuff.
That is a good song. That is a really good song.
And I really especially love Cartman's version of it when he's leading the hippies to California.
I haven't seen that episode.
So good. Because the hippies are all like, they're basically played as zombies.
Well, yeah. They drill. I watched them drill through a fucking crowd of them. Remember that?
No. There's actually another with homeless. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's the homeless.
Homeless, right. Because they're like, change.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to see that whole episode. Yeah, change.
So cool. I love that episode.
They are so funny.
They are. That's interesting. That could actually lead us right into the topic.
That would have been a good fucking segue.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about first? You had some potpourri topics?
Yeah, let me grab my docs.
Let me get some fucking docs.
Got some docs. Don't you wish your girlfriend was docs like me? Don't you wish your wiener was washed like me?
Yeah, I gotta have a cock wash.
Okay, so we're casting, right? That's what we're doing tonight. Uh-huh. We're casting with our all new ultra high tech brand spanking new setup.
That's right. We got real microphones. We've got a real mixer. We've got a fucking Apple Power Mac.
We do. We have a MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro that's recording on GarageBand. I mean, we have taken a leap.
Yeah.
Gone are the days of the three-way splitter feeding into the Lenovo and talking over Skype. Sky's the limit now, baby.
Scott Bakula would be pretty jealous of us, actually, for this leap.
For sure.
This is such a huge leap.
We made a quantum leap.
Easily.
What's so funny
is... We've actually taken the leap. Check this out, listeners. Don't know if you can hear that. That's me scratching my beard. That's how good the audio is.
Check this out, listeners. That's the sound of my tongue rubbing against the roof of my mouth.
And everyone just shut the cast off.
Yes, that's right.
Because that was fucking disgusting.
It's actually so good we can hear the sound of my air conditioner turning off and on. We're going to have to do something about that.
Yeah, we will. We'll put pillows over it, smother it.
Yeah, or we like just turn it off temporarily. Although, I'd be sweaty. You don't want me sweaty on a podcast.
No, I agree.
Fuck no.
What's worse, us sweating or the listeners having to hear shitty audio?
The listeners for having shitty audio.
No, I think us sweating is worse.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's not the only thing that's happening that's new at the Bald Move headquarters.
Shit, no, man.
We've upgraded sites.
We're moving on up.
We are. We're in the big leagues now because we are on WordPress. We have PHP BB forums now. We got rid of the shitty LaFora thing that we were doing.
What happened is Aaron pried open his wallet. And I said, like, you know, got a site on justhost.com. I got to recommend them. It's by far. I've been doing hosting shit and freelance web work for 15 years now. I can't even believe it. And Just Host is the best experience for the cheapest. And real tip, if you're going to go sign up for Just Host account, go through, like, you're ordering for real, and then start to close the browser window.
Yeah.
And this thing will pop up and give you half off your order just for threatening to close.
That's funny, because I actually registered zombiedrill.com. It's another site that I'm starting for the Walking Dead series on AMC. And I forgot about that, because I remember you had told me about that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I won't get it now. And so I closed the window, and it's like 50% off for whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll buy it now.
Right. It's such a good deal. It's like, God.
It really is. I ended up with like 2 years of hosting for $70 or something.
Yeah, it's retarded.
So cheap. And a free domain name. They transferred it over from GoDaddy.
It's really pretty slick. And Yeah, I can't say enough good stuff about it. Their cPanel is hot. I mean, it works on, like, a lot of places.
Like, one-click WordPress install.
It's so good. One-click full site backups. Mm-hmm. You can schedule them. It's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm going on and on. This is, like, what web hosting is supposed to be, and I've just been shitty providers. But very impressed so far.
Me too. And speaking of zombiedrill.com, if you guys did not know about that, I actually put a link to it on the front page of our main site. And like I said, it's going to be about The Walking Dead TV series.
Don't limit yourself, man.
Go check it out. What do you mean?
It's not just, I mean, that's how it's going to start, but we got so much zombie juice.
I've got zombie juice
for days.
If the zombie virus is going to start somewhere, it's going to start in me because I have so much zombie juice inside of my brain.
It's going to go Nova.
It will.
It's going to go critical.
And it will just start infecting everyone.
Yeah, once you reach critical zombie juice mass inside your body, just uncontrollable zombification is the only way to go from there.
Absolutely. So I started that site, so check it out. Also, Jonestown Jams. I found a lot of new music on that.
I'm digging Jonestown Jams. I like the different feel. I like
NPR
style. NPR thing you're rocking. Nina Totenberg.
Oh, and this vocals. New setup? Oh, man. It's going to get smooth.
I can't wait. The dulcet tones of Jim Jones.
Hell yeah. So that's about it. That's for the housekeeping site. Intro stuff.
New forums. Our feeds are still fucked up. Hopefully by the time you hear this, they will be unfucked.
Yep.
Well, we're trying to do the feed unfucking right now.
Unfuck that feed.
Unfuck the feed.
Okay.
UFTF.
What are we talking about tonight? Random bullshit?
I've got some topics, but you want to go first?
I guess so, yeah. I could talk about...
Should we roll for initiative?
Yeah, those fucks, man.
Fucking...
Oh, man. God.
We're not ready to unleash the rivalry just yet.
Yep.
We got to wait for our friend Peter to rejoin us as his brainchild.
Oh, speaking of new music, there's this artist I found called Dr. Awkward. He's probably,
I like it already.
He's probably coming up in the next Jonestown Jams, at least one of his songs. He has this song about, like, drinking and playing video games.
Yeah.
And the
part every of it, night for us.
Well, yeah, true. And apparently for him, too, because they've actually coined their own term, I guess, between him and his friends. They call getting drunk getting pixelated. And that is kind of like the coolest modern term for getting, like, trashed or like drunk it. Or whatever you want to call it.
Let's get pixelated tonight. We're going We're going 8-bit.
Because you start seeing things in slow motion. Yeah. 8-bit.
How pixelated did you get last night? 8-bit, baby.
Exactly.
We're going back to EGA. I like it, too.
I'm taking it back to Commodore
16
style.
Colors, baby. Well, one thing I want to talk about is I saw Scott Pilgrim.
Sweet. How was
that? It's kind of too late to save its cinema career. I guess it didn't do too well. I mean,
really?
That's the impression I got. I didn't really check it with Box Office Mojo.
I heard it cost a lot to make, too.
Oh, I can see. Because holy shit, the special effects and cinematography was hot. Who's that guy? Michael Cera?
Yeah.
This is the first role that he could almost be described as cool in. I mean, it's kind of like an alternate universe where Michael Cera is a ladies' man. And he can score...
Where he's not George Michael.
He can score a hot Asian girlfriend and a hot hipster girlfriend and have, you know, women fighting over him.
Hmm.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. I was not familiar with the comic book at all. I had flipped through it at my local comic book store as kind of in preparation. And I also played the first stage of the Scott Pilgrim video game for PlayStation 3, which I got to say, if you're in the brawling video games at all, like Double Dragon...
Mm-hmm.
It is the best brawler I've probably ever played. It's funny.
Really?
The controls are smooth. In fact, after the podcast, we ought to like throw down on it a little bit.
Okay, let's get pixelated.
Yeah, let's get pixelated, man. And the controls are responsive. The moveset's pretty cool. So I kind of knew sort of what to expect, but then I didn't. And this is kind of like, did you see Speed Racer, the Wachowski brothers?
Remake? No. Never saw that.
It had kind of visuals like that, like hyper-real, but it's set in the real world, but every once in a while it just go there, like as a fantasy sequence.
Huh.
And the plot of Scott Pilgrim is that Scott wants to date this super cool hipster girl, but to do so, he must defeat her 7 evil ex-boyfriends. Or awesome. 7 evil exes.
Your princess is in another castle.
Exactly. And he has to be. They fight to the death. And these sequences are just freaking awesome. And the music, the soundtrack, Jim, you know, we ought to go see that maybe this weekend, because I wouldn't mind seeing it again. And the soundtrack is amazing. There's so much good music.
Well, like, what kind of music? Is it like video game?
Like Anamanaguchi, 8-bit, punk rock. Right.
They did the theme song for it.
And just really good stuff. Very good, you know, grunge rock. I'm not very good at naming all the different, like, you know,
the bands.
Like when we heard Protomin for the first time, it was like, yeah, it's like a gothic prog rock opera. And I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. How did you know that?
Yeah.
You're like Adam walking around the Garden of Eden is naming shit. And it's like, yeah, that's what it is. That's an ostrich. You called it. You nailed that. That is an ostrich.
It's a perfect name.
But I got to recommend it. I had a great time, and it's the first time in a long time I've seen a movie completely sober. And it was an amazing experience.
So. First time in a long time you've been sober.
Yeah, I sobered up just to see the movie. I wanted to make a good impression on Scott Pilgrim.
Awesome.
So I got to give that two thumbs up.
I'm trying to think of other movies that we've been watching that we could talk about, because we're watching movies every night.
Running Man.
I don't remember much of Running Man.
You don't?
I was pretty inebriated at
Jesse
the time.
Jesse the Body? Oh, man.
Jesse the Body, huh?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That movie was almost an experience. I don't remember a lot that happened with it. I remember Rambo 3 being insane. Do you remember that?
Don't remember much of that either.
Are you serious?
To be honest, I'm drawing a blank on that whole night.
We got so pixelated. It was just... We were in what do you call that when it's just black and white? Is that 0-bit, 1-bit?
Black and white?
We were dithered down to monochrome, black and white. We were so pixelated.
Yep, no anti-aliasing.
No, we were on a 2x2 screen. Just two black, two white pixels. That's how pixelated we got. All right, so maybe it's not the best idea to talk about movies we haven't seen. Did not register in our altered state.
Okay. Kind of along the lines of movies, another thing I want to talk about is Apple just announced their new Apple TV.
What?
Yeah, it's like this tiny. It's about as big as maybe like two iPhones. Well, maybe four, like two stacked on top of each other and then two side by side. Anyway, they're introducing like an a la carte.
Is iPhone a unit of measurement now?
It is.
It's joined to Volkswagen Beetle, the football field.
Yep.
And the ranch style home as a go to estimate of size.
Absolutely.
So it's about four iPhones.
And the bushel and the peck.
And peck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, they introduced a la carte TV episodes. So for 99 cents, you can rent, and notice my use of the word rent. You don't actually own these, you rent them for 30 days. And once you play them, you have 48 hours to watch them as many times as you want.
That is not compatible with the way I live my life.
Me either. And that's kind of what I want to talk about. I just wanted to talk about like the whole concept of a la carte television, like channel surfing. Like, how do you feel about the concept of a la carte television?
First of all, they actually had me in like sitting up with my eyebrows raised at 30 days, and then my eyebrows firmly turned into a furrowed brow. Frown when you said you have 48 hours once you hit the play button.
Yeah.
Because
to finish it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I get in the, like if I'm on call, I get in the middle of something and it's like, I'm no longer in the mood to watch it. I want to eject it. I like the Netflix model. I like the fact that I've got what I got and I can watch as long as I want, as long as I'm paying for it.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I feel. I was just,
but I've long, cause we're sweating about, we haven't had cable in so long.
Yeah,
I got high def antenna to watch local content, and I get like 30 channels just on the local high def stuff. So we were thinking about getting cable just to watch AMC's Walking Dead, but we thought it's like, you know, that's like 30, 40 bucks a month just for one show. That's a lot.
Yeah. That's
Why
too
can't
much.
I go to AMC.com and buy like the Walking Dead season pass for 20 bucks?
You can go to iTunes and do that when it comes out. But the problem with that is, especially for me doing the podcast, I'm not going to be able to watch it until the next day.
Right.
Which it doesn't, like, it's not
compatible.
They need to release
that. They need to release that during the broadcast.
Simultaneously. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I don't understand why they don't do it.
I don't know. It might be coming. They've tried some innovative things like, what is that? I don't watch it, but it's Friday Night Lights. It's a sports show about high school football in Texas on NBC. Mm-hmm. They actually released that on demand, the Comcast service, like 6 months before it was released on the airwaves.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's like they're trying these. And I've heard Comcast on demand. I had it 2 years ago, and it was really cool. They had things like, as a football fan, I love the fact that the day after the game, all the games, you could watch all the games, and it would just cut from the ball being hiked to the ball being dead, and it'd go it's just chopped. Like, every dead space of the game was removed.
Why don't they just... Oh, like the downtime between plays?
Yeah, like it would go from the guy getting tackled and the whistle blowing the ball dead.
To just being reset at the...
Instantly reset hiking the ball again. And you could watch a game of football in like 35 minutes.
Sure, that's awesome.
And it was like, so it's like if you missed a game, it wasn't so good for watching your home team because that's not part of the experience. But like games around the league, you could watch like a whole afternoon's with the football in like 3 hours. It was amazing.
Huh.
And like they had it for the whole season, every game, for as long as the season. And it's like, and your home team, like I lived in Indianapolis, I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan, their entire game archive was for the whole season. You could watch the whole thing. You could go back and, you know, I thought it was really cool. And they had like kids things. It was very much programmable, and it's like a free add-on to your digital cable. I would love something like that. Why can't I just pay for that?
Dude, if I knew the answer to that question...
I mean, these, like, it seems like cable has agreed that we need a lot of mediocre channels to justify people paying $100 for. I'm like, I only want to see four or five things. Why can't I just give them directly the money?
Well, here's
it's like
here's
some of the Mad Men money and the Walking Dead money is going to pay for some bass fishing show on the Outdoor Channel 3.
Well,
that's not right. That's not fair.
Here's part of the issue. How are you... If that's the case, how are you ever going to figure out what you want to watch or what you don't want to watch?
By reading magazines and the internet the same way I do now. Do you think I actually figure out what I'm going to watch by watching TV?
No, but you find shows by channel surfing, don't you? I mean, just
sometimes, but not often, because usually when I'm watching TV, if I'm watching broadcast TV, it's by kind of appointment. I mean, sometimes a channel surf, it's usually to the movie channels and stuff like that. You know, if I'm watching my TV, most of the time it's through Netflix or PlayZone or stuff I've downloaded. So it's like, I think that's where our generation is going to. We want on-demand TV.
We do.
We want to pay for season, like, you know, I can pay DirecTV $150 to watch every football game. Why can't I do that for, you know, certain channels or certain series of shows? I want to download the Hero subscription or the Mad Men subscription. I'm going to pay $20. Yeah. Get them in high def, release as soon as they're broadcast, maybe even before, you know, and if they wanted to, you know, but they're going to do bullshit like you can only watch it for 1 week and you can only watch it 3 times.
Well, I think part of it is.
And if it detects more than 6 eyeballs at a time on it, you know, it self-destructs.
Yep, retina scanning, facial recognition
technology.
It's going
to go through the PlayStation Eye or the Xbox Kinect.
Shit.
4 humans detected. Abort, abort.
And it shuts down your computer. I think part of it might be actually that the advertisers haven't really bought into the whole internet television scheme yet.
But I'm saying fuck the advertisers. You don't need them anymore because the people are now paying you.
Well, if you want a system like Netflix, you do need advertisement. Unless you're going to charge a lot more than they do.
What do you
mean? Because they run ads.
Netflix?
Yeah, don't they?
When does Netflix run ads?
Or am I thinking of Hulu? I'm thinking
of Hulu. You're thinking of Hulu because Hulu's free.
Yeah, well.
You can do it.
Hulu is partially free.
Well,
they have a premium service.
They do, but that's kind of like paying for cable. I mean, their free service is very much exactly like, you know, TV. It's got commercials. It's paid for by sponsors, blah, 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 blah. I'm saying go the Netflix model. You pay X amount per month. And I think Netflix is ridiculously low. They could probably charge two. Netflix would probably charge three. Okay, just between us listeners, don't let Netflix know this. But they could charge 3 times more than they are now, and I'd still pay for it gladly.
I don't know how many people would do that. Now, if they had every single movie that they have on DVD for streaming, yes, I could see that service being worth $24.
Well, I'm saying, like, if they had that on demand, I mean, you'd probably be able to get me for $30, $40 that way.
But that's the price of cable. Why don't you just get cable at that point?
But cable,
and a DVR.
Cable, I have to have a DVR, and I have to, you know, I have to manage all that stuff. I'm talking about completely on demand. I'm in the mood for this. I don't have to remember to record it. I don't have to search it out. It's like, I'm just in the mood to see something funny. Let me go to the fun. Oh, yeah, this is cool. Let me watch it. That's how we kind of do Netflix now.
Yeah. True.
So, I don't know. I'd like to see it go that way.
I wonder if part of it is the audience has not grown. Like, the audience in that medium has not grown enough to where they can justify.
The old people haven't died fast enough.
Exactly.
That's true. So. Although, I think my dad would grok that. I mean, like, my dad's generation can't figure out a DVR to save their life.
Yeah.
But you've sat them down with an intuitive interface and it's like, okay, what do you feel like? Give a text search so you can search for, you know, MASH or whatever the hell he wants to watch. The History Channel. That's what dads love watching.
Oh, dude, I love the History Channel. History Channel, Discovery Channel.
You need to go impregnate a chick because you're ready to be a dad.
Fuck that.
That's high-level dad stuff.
Fuck that.
You sure you don't want to pay $30 for cable? You seem like the kind of guy that would like to.
Why? No, dude, I haven't.
You just said you love the History Channel.
Yeah, but I haven't paid for cable. I haven't paid for television.
Oh, God. He's made a stand.
In ages.
This is like the PAX thing. You won't ever go to a Gabe and Jerry Mike and Jerry panel because he's put his foot down.
It's nothing like that. That is totally irrational. My rational explanation for cable is that I don't need it wasting my time. Like, you see me. I come into the living room, even with network television, and I turn the TV on and I zone out, and I don't do anything.
You do tend to veg on TV more than I do.
Yeah, and that's the reason for a long time that I didn't even watch it. I didn't even have a television in my last place.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to stay away from that much television.
Okay.
I think the a la carte, the Netflix, that's good because there's, like, a barrier to entry where I have to either know what I want to watch or search long enough to find something. Whereas TV, you just turn it on and something's on.
Gotcha.
So that could suck up my time pretty quick.
Another topic I want to talk about is brief fantasy football update. I don't know if anyone cares. I'm going to keep it short. But I'm actually, for the first time, maybe not the first time, I'm opening up undefeated in the league so far.
Wow.
And the other thing is, I did very well last year, so I drafted in the 10th out of the 12-team league, which is 12-team league's pretty challenging. So I got pretty shitty picks, and I have been working the waiver wire like a heavy bag and picking up guys that were available, like landed Michael Vick. He scored 30 points for me last week, prized the margin of my victory. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Don't have Peyton Manning. the best QB I could get in the slot was Joe Flacco, which
never heard of him. That's a bad sign.
That's a bad sign. I thought he might be good this year with some weapons around him, but he's the Baltimore QB and he just really sucks. I actually dropped him the waivers to draft someone else or to pick up somebody. So really happy about that. We're in a 12-team work league. It's been going on for 8 years now. We have this really cool trophy that we engrave the name of the winner and the year that they win every year, and you get to keep that in your office as like the, you know, the trophy
for a year.
Yep. We have an award ceremony at the end of the year where we bestow the trophy to somebody else, and there's a $600 cash prize pot that we're all playing for. A lot of trash talking, a lot of Monday morning, you know, haha, you fuckers, going around and all this. We waste a lot of time at that work. That's what's so crazy. If I sat and just played like Farmville for as much as we'd waste time on fantasy football during the football season, we'd all be fired.
Yeah.
But fantasy football is socially acceptable.
Yeah, that's kind of bullshit, isn't it?
Like, I'm not the type of fan that dresses up for conventions, although I might start. I kind of want to cosplay as Silent Bob.
Yeah.
But I'm not that guy. But it's always been funny to me to see a jock that will go to a football game with a blue curly wig, blue body paint, horseshoes on his nipples, you know, Mardi Gras beads, and whooping it up, will say, call a person a nerd for putting on pointy ears and a Star Trek uniform.
Yeah, that's
like there's
totally
some
true.
Socially acceptable forms of geeking out. And there's some that are not. I always thought that was weird. It's like exactly the same thing.
They are, yeah.
So, I don't know.
And, I mean, even the fantasy football thing obviously has analogs within the geek realm.
Uh-huh.
And they'll get into that, like, gung-ho, fantasy football, but then you start talking about your Final Fantasy VII character stats, and they're like,
exactly,
fucking nerd.
What's really funny is that for a long time, fantasy football was seen as too nerdy. Like, it was kind of made jocks uncomfortable, and the announcers on TV were not, and that, and then they went to, like, awkwardly reporting fantasy football statistics, and you could tell they were, like, had no fucking clue. Like, you know, some third-string receiver would catch a 90-yard touchdown pass, and they'd be like, whoa, that's going to have the fantasy geeks. It's like, no one has him on his team. There's the third-string fucking receiver.
You know? Yeah.
You never played the game. Shut up, old man. But one of my goals for the show is to get an audience large enough to have a show fantasy football league. I'm so, hoping next – this year, obviously, we didn't get it. Next year, I have high hopes.
It's going to have to be like – a ratio of 25 to 1, the people who don't play, the people who will play.
I would say we need about 500 to 1,000 listeners to have a decent team, 10-team league.
Yeah.
So that's one of my goals.
Okay. Well, maybe that'll happen.
That's a weekly update. I got a big tough. It's me and the other undefeated team in the division going head to head here in week 3. So I'll either be 3-0 or 2-1, and kind of sad.
Cool.
Tune in next week.
Or don't. Okay, what else do we want to talk about?
I thought you had the potpourri topics, man.
I shot my load, man.
You shot your load?
I'm done.
More than that.
Oh, I'm done.
Our next segment is CCG Graveyard, and this is a segment that we really wanted to debut right from the very beginning. When we originally envisioned this cast, we thought we would be doing kind of more potpourri-type casts that would be 30 minutes or so in length that we would have time to have regular features like Would You Rather and CCG Graveyard, and we had like a Dust in the Closet and a couple other things. And the point of CCG Graveyard is we like customizable and collectible card games, and there are an awful lot that have been made over the years. In fact, in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a glut. These cards, I mean, you still got the big few, like Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh! But there's been a lot of quality stuff that's gone by the wayside. Notable examples are Star Trek customizable card game, Star Wars card game. We're not going to talk about those. We're going to talk about out-of-print CCGs that you might not have heard of. And the charm of these is that you can buy cases of them for pennies on the dollar.
Oh, yeah.
I
think I got the one we're going to talk about today, Wars. I think I picked that up for about $10 a case.
Right.
So
you're talking enough for you and your friends to play with for weeks for pocket change. The other charm of it is that the rules are static. You don't have to worry about power creep or anything like that, because what's out there is all that you're going to get. There's still some kind of active, thriving communities, so you can still kind of go and discuss and, you know, find all that stuff. But again, the chief virtue is that it's cheap, so it's really easy to build decks. You can build your dream decks. You can, you know, buy cases and cases and cases and get a play set of about everything you need and have fun with your buddies.
Yeah, that kind of goes both ways. I mean, the fact that it can become stale after a while of playing, it's kind of a negative, but there are so many of these out there.
I was going to say
that you just switch to the next one.
Creak open your wallet again and put out another $5, get another case coming your way.
Yeah.
But there's like crazy ones. Ones that we've got that we're going to be talking about are there's the Mega Man, Austin Powers. Then it's stuff that looks like clear shit, like Austin Powers. But then there's a couple of really cool ones, like the one we're going to talk about tonight. There's one that's kind of like a cyberpunk theme, so we're kind of legitimately excited to play some of them, and some of them we're just looking into ripping them in. So tonight's cast is one of the former examples. We had no idea what to expect. We thought the cases looked pretty cool, the art looked pretty good. It's a CCG by Decipher, who are famous for bringing the Star Wars and Star Trek CCG games to the gamer attention. And what they tried to do is they lost the Star Wars license. So they tried to take the core mechanics, which were actually universally praised for the Star Wars customizable card game, and come up with an entirely new license that they owned intellectual property for. And they called it, unfortunately, Wars. Interestingly, Michael Stackpole actually wrote the game's backstory
and wrote a couple of short stories that kind of fleshed out the plot of the game. You might know him as the head writer of the X-Wing series of novels.
Yeah, I was going to say I recognize his name from the Star Wars.
So he's got some Star Wars writing chops. And John Howe of Lord of the Rings illustration and movie fame designed one of the races, the race called the Quay. Basically, very much like Magic, you've got five factions. You've got three human and two alien. There's one that's called the Earthers that are basically Earth is now ruled by giant corporations. They're the bright, shiny Federation-looking troops. All their ships are nice. Their, you know, armies all have matching uniforms and whatnot. You've got the Mavericks, who are a race of kind of like borderline pirate Earthers that have left, and they live now in the asteroid belt. And they have a lot of, you know, scars and radiation burns and cybernetic implants. And then you've got the rounding out the human factions is the Gungans, who are kind of a pastiche of Eastern cultures that apparently their whole continent, the whole continent of Asia, got nuked. And they took off and went to Mars, colonized it, and renamed it Gungan for whatever the hell reason.
Oh, I thought they lived on the Boo.
Unfortunately, there is a little bit of uncomfortable Gungan kind of wordplay there, but sure. They're very cool. They kind of look like space samurai. And you've got the two alien races, one that's the Quay, and they're kind of like an insectoid slave race that has this really cool flavor mechanic where you can they have one type of card and you can pay energy and flip it over and mutate it to a different version of the same creature. And then the final race is the Shi, which is an advanced race of floating psychic aliens, which if that sounds familiar, the Earthers and the Quay and the Shi, it's because they're basically StarCraft. They're modeled exactly after StarCraft. The human faction is roughly translate to the Earthers. The Zergs are roughly translate to the Quay. And the, what do they call the third race? The Sai. Ah, shit. For StarCraft, I'm not a StarCraft fan. Dude, but the.
You're talking to the guy who doesn't like RTS here.
Yeah, but what is the name of that? It's the Protoss. Or Protoss.
Yeah, Protoss, yeah.
So the Protoss roughly map to the Shi in the way they look and the way they kind of feel in the game.
The mechanics are pretty interesting in this game. There's a lot of stuff I like about it over Magic the Gathering, which sure. is kind of the big one.
Sure.
Wow. There's so much to talk about. What do we want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about the most interesting thing first, the way they handle the energy the concept. Because I think that's the single coolest part of the game.
I do too, yeah.
So you got a 60-card deck, and that is your energy. It gets shuffled into basically four piles at any one time. Your what you would call your library, your main deck, they call your reserve energy. Uh-huh. Each turn, you get to activate a certain amount of these cards by peeling them off the top deck and putting them face down beside it. That is your activated energy.
And that's determined basically by how many icons you have on the board.
Yeah. So I guess we need to stop and talk about your locations. Much like Magic, you've got these kind of like land cards. And mm-hmm. each one represents a different location in space or on a planet. And the cards have two sides, one that faces you and one that faces your opponent. And there is between 0 and 3 energy icons on both of those sides. So like an ideal land to play has the most energy icons for your side and the minimum energy icons for your side. In uh-huh. addition, there's a faction icon. And when you play units and creatures and the interrupt cards, you'll notice that each one has an energy cost, and it also has a number of what they call support icons. So if you've got a unit that costs 3 energy and 3 earth icons, you have to have 3 activated energy to play it, and you have to have amassed in your locations some combination of 3 earther icons. So, yep. So that's the interesting way about this is there's really no way to get mana screwed except if you build a multi-faction deck and you happen to have in your card a bunch of a type of faction that you don't have icon support icons on the board to play, you're basically fucked.
Oh, I got hit by that last time we played. Yeah,
yeah, and it seems to suffer most from, again, multi-faction decks. If you're a pure faction deck, it hardly ever happens, and it also seems to strike if, because you get to pick, unlike Magic, where you kind of random draw what you start off with mana. You get to pick one card from the start of the deck. You reveal to your opponent. He does the same for you. You place those, and those are your starting locations. And obviously, you want to pick one that maximizes your energy and maximizes your port icons. I think maybe the mistake you made is the locations are slightly more of one than the other, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we're still kind of newbies at the game. You want to take that into consideration and make sure you draw the card that has maybe the least common faction type.
Yeah, well,
so,
I mean, we're playing with these starter decks that are already pre-built decks.
Right,
assuming going into this that
they're fairly
balanced. This should be a balanced deck that's easy to play for a beginner. Well, turns out it's a little more difficult than that.
Right. And some of the decks, I think, do a better job than others. But so
we should go back to the energy.
So say you've got 10 energy icons. You're going to draw 10 cards off the top of your deck and put them face down to the left of your reserve deck.
Actually, 11, because you always get one.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You get one plus however many energy you got on the board. So, and you start with 7 cards in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you play cards, you take the energy cost and you move those from the, without looking at them, you move them from your active energy to your used pile, which is above your reserve deck. Occasionally, the game will instruct you to lose energy. And just like, you know, the laws of thermodynamics dictate, you know, not all energy, it's not a perfect process. So some energy is lost in the conversion process. That energy gets into your lost pile, which goes to the right of your reserve deck.
And it's a good time to bring up that energy is actually your life for the game.
Exactly.
So whereas you have 20 life points, which are separate from your mana in Magic, you actually have your energy, which is part of your life.
And it's also your draw deck.
Yeah. So you're drawing on your life, playing cards with your life. There's a very delicate balance there that I really like.
I like how elegant it is, because at the end of each turn, the final step is a recycle step. You take both you and your opponent, take the energy in your use pile, and put it to the bottom of your reserve deck. So it's kind of like that's your recycle step. But then, you know, the second to final step is the draw phase. You only get to draw from your active pile.
Yeah.
So if you shoot your wad and place 3 or 4 units out of your hand onto the board and use up 12, 13 energy, you might not be able to draw for next turn.
Yeah. And then you've depleted your hand, which means you need to draw, but you can't draw.
Exactly.
And you can get yourself into trouble real fast.
Yeah. You can easily cost yourself basically 2 turns by overdrawing and not appropriately saving for the next energy for the next turn. So I think that's the key difference, that it's a really elegant system. It feels very spacey. You know, you're using this energy, recycling it. Sometimes getting lost due to inefficiencies.
And it's all you have. You're self-contained out in the middle of space.
Yep.
That's all you get.
Yep. The other thing is, so how do you attack how do you win the game? You win the game by making the other guy lose all of his energy. And the way you do that is, you notice that there's energy icons on both sides of each location. If you deploy a force on your side of the board and it's uncontested, there's no enemy forces on the other side, you get to what they call burn energy to the tune of however many energy icons are on your opponent's side of the board for that location.
The interesting thing about that, I'll go ahead and explain the other way that you can make an opponent lose energy. It's through battle.
Sure.
You can attack them, kill their units, and they can either lose the units or lose a certain amount of energy. It seems to me that actually attacking is a much more effective way to make the opponent lose energy, because you're limited by the number of icons on their side of the location to 1, 2, maybe 3 if you're lucky. But in a battle, if it's a very lopsided battle, you can end up taking 15 plus energy from them in one battle.
Sure. On the other hand, that encourages, number one, you need to beef up on the areas where you have multiple energy icons on your side. Like, you want to definitely defend the sites where you've got 3 energy icons. And it also discourages, because the first time I played the game, I spread my forces to try to maximize my burn to Jim.
Yeah.
And what he did is concealed his, or concentrated his forces on one particular location. So I was burning him for 3 or 4 energy, but the battles that he fought were so lopsided that I was burning him for 3 or 4, and he was taking me for 15 because he would have 5 or 6 guys facing my 1 or 2.
Yeah.
And the way combat works is you have, just like magic, you've got an attack and defense. You also have something called tactics, which we'll get into a minute. But you simply add up your attack and you add up your defense. You subtract one from the other. Whoever's got the most, or whoever got the most attack. So like I say, I've got 17 and Jim's got 25. He's going to be getting me for 8 points of energy. Now, there's a couple things there. You can choose, when you lose a battle, you can choose to lose troops or ships. And if you do, their defense costs peel off how much energy you lose. Let's say you've got a starship with a defense of 5, and he burned me for 8 units of energy. Well, I can choose to lose that ship, and then I only have to take 3 energy off of my main deck.
And you can actually lose energy from your hand as well.
You can lose energy from any card pile except for Lost, which is cool because they're like, if you got a really good hand, your temptation is to lose it from your active or your reserve, or probably from your reserve deck.
Oh, yeah.
But then every once in a while, because you reveal each card you lose, every once in a while you lose a really painful one.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's another reason to have lots of cards in your hand, because sometimes you've got, like, you know, worthless cards like in-game locations, you know, what you call kind of like your weenies from Magic. You've got like some weaker units that have no place in the end game. You can choose to lose them.
And stuff that you can't play because you don't have the support icons.
Exactly. You can choose that rather than losing precious energy. Now, the other wild card in the game is a concept called tactics. And each card has a value from 0 to like 6 tactic score. Any location that has a combined force tactics of 4 or greater, you get to draw a destiny card for that battle. And what that means is each card, in addition to their energy cost and their support icons, also have a destiny number from 0 to 6.
Uh-huh.
And you take that destiny and you add it to your attack power. So if you've got a destiny of 6 and you add that and you've got roughly even forces, and your opponent has no tactics advantage there, so he doesn't get a destiny card, or he draws a 0 or 1, that can really swing the tide of the battle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've lost several battles to you just because of the destiny draws.
And there's construction strategy there, too, because weaker cards have higher destiny.
Yeah.
Stronger cards have lower destiny. So it's something you got to consider. You can't just load up on powerful cards because you're going to get spanked on destiny. So yeah. There's also cards that allow you to draw multiple destiny. Like, for example, the Mavericks have this card called Jessel Swin, who looks like a freaking lunatic. He's in a straitjacket. But one of his special abilities is each time you reveal a card for battle destiny, if you pay 3 energy, you can reveal 3 cards and choose the best battle destiny.
Yeah.
That is devastating.
That's a very cool card. Yeah.
And he also has another ability where you can pay 3 energy to pop an attrition immunity shield around him, which means you can use him for attrition, lose him for his energy cost, but he kind of effectively regenerates. Yeah. There's other weapons and characters that the opponent has that can target. You know, you can actually force a person to lose a vehicle, or a troop. Well, if you've got your regeneration shield popped on him, he can't make you lose his car because it's a strategic support card.
Did we actually talk about attrition? I don't think we did. When you draw a battle destiny, it's the number of the destiny draw is the amount of attrition that you do to your opponent, which basically means that they have to lose that much of their force in defense points.
That's true, because if without destiny, you can theoretically not take any, you can not lose any force. You can spend energy to keep your troops alive. Battle destiny basically says this destiny made you take this much damage. And the rough thing about it is if you take 1 point of attrition, you have to lose a unit.
Yeah, even if it's a 6 defense.
Yeah, unit. If all you got there is 6 defense, you have to use that unit. But now on the other hand, if you got like 15 incoming damage, there's all kinds of strategy about, I've got a card with weak attack but high defense, and that's kind of like you use that as armor for your harder hitting troops.
Yeah, and there's something about this that I have a big problem with, but we'll talk about it when we get to the negatives.
Sure. But in the end, the combat is very fast and efficient, and it does a good job of being kind of like these exciting swings in the battle because, you know, your opponent, let's say you fight a battle and the destiny goes badly in your favor, and you've got to lose one of your troops, uh-huh. So now you're at a numerical disadvantage. Well, the opponent on the next turn can choose to put even more troops there and yeah. really put the screws to you.
Oh, yeah.
So, but on the same time, you can always pick up off a planet, like abandon it, use your starships to load up vehicles and troops off the planet and move it to another sector.
Yeah,
and
possibly. Hit them where they're not. I mean, that gets tricky because last game we played, I actually set down a ton of troops to try and take you out of a location. And I ended up drawing a low battle destiny. You drew a high one, and it killed, like, most of my troops. I think right. I had three, and it killed two of them.
Right.
And then I had no way to get that troop out of there.
Right.
There's literally – you can't do anything
right.
if you don't have a ship or something to transport him.
Right.
And so then the next turn, you plopped down, like, three more guys, came in, hit me, and took, like, 15, 20.
Yeah, it was a double – it was a double whammy.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
So the game does force you to think strategically and like, okay, how many cards am I going to draw this turn? Because the cards that I draw this turn is going to be less energy I have to use less turn. How many cards am I going to deploy? Because that's each card I deploy costs energy that I'm not going to get to draw for my draw step. You know, am I going to deploy a troop here or absorb some energy burn so I can next turn deploy enough to actually make a difference and win the battle?
Mm-hmm.
And because all this goes on behind kind of like in your mind as an opponent, you never know. It's like, okay, I've got three or four troops here. Am I secure? Is this guy not playing a card because he has no play? Or is he saving up for the Uber? So should I keep building up this or should I start to – okay, I got four or five cards here. Is it secure? Can I start building and burning them in other locations? It's got a lot of strategy to it.
Yeah. The problem that I have with Destiny overall, I think, is just that – it's a game of chance. I mean, there are not very many elements of chance in this game. The only thing I can think of is the card draw and the destiny.
Right.
And I kind of wish they had removed the destiny or come up with some other way to do it because, like I said, that battle was actually in my favor, and the only thing that kept it from being a strategic play on my part was the battle destiny.
Yeah, I think that in lieu of battle destiny, they should have used – because there's very few what you would call – you know, instant or sorcery type spells. There's
a few
what they call
interrupts.
They're called interrupts, and they use a stack very similar to magic. But there's not the game changers like, you know, double your attack and defense for this turn, or like the magic's got. And instead, you've got this destiny crap where it is true random chance. Like, you might as well roll a six-sided dice and add. Now, again, you can stack the deck by, you know, loading up on weenie cards so you have high destiny, and you can use cards like this, you know, Jostle Swin to boost your destiny. But you're right. Jim is right. There is a lot of, you know, kind of random chance there. that's about it for the gameplay, really.
Yeah, there isn't much more to it.
You've got locations, you got vehicles, troops, you try to control.
I mean, you've got things like weapons and interrupts, which we haven't talked much about, but everybody knows how to use those.
Yeah, an interrupt is...
Weapon has a special ability.
Exactly. It's exactly like equipment and magic. They buff, you know, your destiny or your attack or your defense, or they have synergy with your troops. There's other things like... I did think it was interesting, like the Quay. I didn't talk about the what they call, like... you know, Magic in M2010 had a convertible turtle.
Yeah.
Where it was a 1/4.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A 1 attack, 1 and 4 defense turtle that you could spend mana and flip it so it had 4 attack and 1 defense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Quay, about half of their creatures are like what they call mutatable or flippable.
Yeah.
So it has one set of rule text and stat abilities on the top side and one set upside down on the bottom side. You play it bottom side first, and then you can pay energy to transform that creature. And they usually have, like, it starts off as a support role. You spend some energy, and now it's an attack unit. Or it starts off as a defensive unit. You spend energy, and it becomes an attack unit.
Or it starts off really weak, and then you flip it, and it has all these abilities, and this attack and defense go way up. It's cool.
Yeah,
cool.
And it's like another one of those things where you see, you know, your opponent can radically change his side of the board based on, you know, using that stuff. So I was like, I thought that was a pretty cool mechanic. You know, they've got a lot of units that have very clear advantages and disadvantages, like utility. Like the Earthers have this entrenched infantry that I quite like. It's only 3 energy to play. It has 3 power and 5 tactics and 6 defense, which is crazy high.
Yeah.
But the problem is, as long as this character is out of sight, as an additional cost for the player to play a unit there, the player loses, destroyed, 2 energy. Huh. And then, so it's like, this is very good to take a piece of land, but you better have a way to sacrifice this card, because each time you drain here, let's say I wipe out the opposing force, and now I'm draining him for energy. Every time I drain here, if this character's out of sight, I also lose 2 energy. So it's like most times the average kind of energy total for an opponent's side is going to be 2. Yeah. So unless you can get rid of this guy, you're doing as much damage to you as you are to your opponent. So he's incredibly awesome as an assault character, but once the battle's been won, you need to get rid of him as soon as possible.
Yep.
There's lots of cards like that. There's the Gungans have this cool resource technician that is used for, like, basically invading an enemy land, because as long as this character is out of sight, the word no support, which is the faction icons, are on your side, you generate 2 more energy here. So if I take over my opponent's lands that have no support icons for me, I'm gaining the energy that I've got on that place plus 2 bonus ones. So there's a lot of really cool synergy and tactics you can use in the cards.
Indeed, indeed.
A word about the art. I don't think you were as impressed as I was.
I'm not. A lot of it feels generic to me. Like, I'm sitting here thumbing through, what deck is this? Incursion? No, that's the...
You've got the She Earthling force, I think.
I have Suppression,
which is on the side. Look at it. It says what factions it is.
Maverick and She.
Okay, so you got the Spacers, the Space Pirates, and the Protoss units.
Yeah, and I'm staring at some of their ships here, and the artwork is just a couple of ships hanging out in space in front of a planet.
I want to say that it's very homeworld. All their ships are very homeworldy. If you remember that game, Homeworld, they're very kind of just basic geometric designs. And I think it's cool, but I kind of see what you're saying. The spaceship design is kind of uninspired.
Well, it's not even the design. It's just the art is uninteresting to me. They could have made this scene so much more interesting by just having it maybe shoot at something, or having, like, a pulled-out view of a planet with nebulas in the back or something. I mean, it seems very generic to me.
On the other hand, I think you're right, and the locations, too, look, you know, kind of like any spaceport you've seen on a crappy space novel, science fiction novel. But look at some of the character art. Like, that Jocelyn Swin, this dude's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's cool, and I thought that was an old woman at first.
Yeah, we both did. Call her, like, the crazy old woman. And, like, Kujiko Turako, I mean, look how that's beautiful.
Yeah, there are a few. The characters,
this dude is, like, fucking crazy.
The characters do seem to be a little more interesting than the ships. But
the Quay art by John Howe is insane. It's like, you know, some freakish cross between aliens and some of the fell beast from The Lord of the Rings and Zergs from StarCraft.
Oh, that's cool. Renardi Anant. That's a pretty sweet one.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, they got some good art. And I do know they made a point to hire, just like Magic, you know, makes it a point to hire the best and brightest fantasy illustrators. They went after the best and brightest sci-fi illustrators.
I feel like Magic has not a 1-up, but like a 10-up on these guys.
Well, on the other hand, have you seen some of the cards for the alpha version of Magic?
Sure. They're
shit.
Bad.
Yeah.
But that was in, like, 1927, man. I mean,
in the olden days. I'm just saying, for a card, they're basically, they had the starter, the main deck, and 2 expansions. The art is, especially when we consider shit like the Austin Powers stuff. And
well, that just has photos from the movie.
And Mega Man. I mean, there's, like, you're a step above just Photoshopping the crap. And I think the card layouts are actually attractive. They used, if you've seen a Star Trek or Star Wars, especially the Star Wars customizable card game, you'll recognize the layout, the Decipher layout right away. It's very distinctive.
Yeah, I'll actually give them that. The layout of the card and the design is very good.
I thought the rules were pretty clear. They have like a little booklet that explains it, and we pretty much understood the basics after 1 gameplay. I think the card quality is excellent stock. In fact, they're just as good, if not, they're just as good a quality as the Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
The packaging looks very nice. And the game plays really, really fun.
I mean, it is.
All we've done is just, we just kind of passed around to four starter decks.
Sure, we haven't even tried customizing them.
And haven't got bored yet.
No, the thing that makes it so interesting to me is, like you said, it's almost pure strategy. I mean, there are very few elements of chance, unlike Magic, where you can get mana screwed. You can not have enough mana to play your creatures. That can happen in this game, but it's usually your own fault.
Yeah, and it's only a, like... And the cure for that is don't play, just draw. Don't use, you can't use energy, so you're going to be drawing all your hand. Eventually, you'll come across a location that's got it. Whereas Magic, all you can do is draw one card.
Yeah,
in this game,
true.
Say your opponent goes crazy, play every land your opponent plays gives you at least one energy icon, because there's none that have no energy icons. So it's like, so he's getting two and three, but you're still getting one, which gives you more cards that you can draw and gives you a chance to draw out of the mana screw.
That's true, yeah, because last game that we played, I got seriously mana screwed because I just couldn't draw any of my lands. I played my first land, I drew a handful of creatures and ships, and that was it. Like, I drew maybe 10 cards and never got a location.
Right. Now, we talk about how intuitive it is. Talk more about your problem with combat. It's not just as random. You just said it doesn't, the flavor of it doesn't feel right either.
Exactly. Like, this game has a lot of backstory, obviously. Michael Stackpole was brought in to help with it.
Right.
So I would think that what do you call it? The Vorthos, all that stuff the flavor is actually important.
Like, combat should feel like space combat.
It should, and for most part, it does. The one thing that I don't like is the Battle Destiny and the attrition. Like, the Battle Destiny is random. Okay, that's fine. But the attrition, when your opponent draws the Battle Destiny and you have to take attrition, you turn your card sideways.
Mm-hmm. So that card's not damaged.
So that card is quote-unquote damaged.
But it still gets to do a full attack.
It still counts in your attack. It still can count in your defense, even. You can lose a damaged unit...
That you have to lose anyway.
That is essentially gone.
Uh-huh.
It's like, my ship got blown up, now I'm going to sacrifice the pieces of it to not have to lose energy. It makes no sense to me in the context of space battles.
My only defense is that there's several things in Magic that don't make sense, like the fact that it's the defender that gets to choose which unit he gets to defend, and the attacker doesn't get to choose who he attacks, and until they cleaned up the... damage on the damage on the stack crap.
Well, I was going to say they're actually cleaning that up.
You kill the creature, and then the opponent sacrifices it to fuck you over.
Yeah,
it's like, how did you just sacrifice a creature I killed?
Exactly, but they're cleaning that up. I mean,
they're
taking that out.
And this, they don't have that. The other thing is, I don't know. It seems to me like there's something to be said. They're like, you can something about. Like, the damaged unit isn't lost yet, and it's kind of like trying to sacrifice itself to cover the retreat of your forces or something along those lines, or the fact that you can choose to spend energy to evade an attack rather than take the loss of the ship.
Okay, so let's go through this logically. The ship is hit to the point
where it's going to be destroyed.
It will destroy. It will explode in space, whatever it's going to do. Yet it's still powerful enough to attack.
Yeah.
And it's still powerful enough to defend.
See, I think that is just they're trying to represent the fact that this battle happens in real time. So it's like everything's just happening at once. It's not like, okay, you attack me, now I attack you, now my ships are destroyed. It's like turn-based, but it's supposed to be happening at the same time. So that ship is getting destroyed, it's already launched its attack or whatever. But I see what you mean. I think that a clean way to do it is... If you lose a ship by attrition, you cannot use it as part. You cannot sacrifice it to deplete how much energy you have to lose.
I think it should just go off the board immediately because it's fair. Both players are drawing attrition.
The only thing I think the only reason they didn't do that, because it does make more sense, is that you think battles swing wildly now.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap! If you have to take attrition and then lose energy on top of that,
at the very, very least, you should not be able to sacrifice it. To not lose energy.
But I'm saying if you did that, I mean, the battle swings would be even wilder. So I think they kind of, like, painted themselves into a little bit of a
game.
Well,
not really.
The other thing is...
the attack is the same.
I think that it's kind of a rule mechanic-y type deal that because I think there's probably, if we got into the expansions and out of the just, like, beginner's pack, there's probably mechanics to take advantage of the fact that you can sacrifice it to... you know, blunt how much energy you're going to lose, or you can do use it for some other effect, but you can't do both. So it's like you're losing this unit anyway, which is going to give you the maximum benefit. Whereas if they force you to just discard it, it's a less strategic, you know, just like people bitched about damage on the stack being removed from magic because it does dumb down the game. No questions about it. An advanced player has one less leg up on a newbie because he's exploiting a rule that doesn't kind of on the surface make sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like I said, I definitely see your point.
But I can buy it from the they just wanted it in there because it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a little trick you can play.
All that said, it almost makes up fun how elegant the energy system. I will forgive a lot of bullshit mechanics in combat. True. Because I love so much the fact that the energy is your life, and it's your card library, and it's your draw hand.
Yeah.
It's so much strategy just in that one decision that they chose to make. It's just incredible. So the downside of the CCG graveyards are, of course, that the longevity, you know, there is – it's a zero-sum game. You're eventually going to get everything you can out of it. But I think this is better than a lot that I've seen because, number one, I'm sure you can tell just by what we've talked about, we played several afternoons worth of games, and we have felt like I just have really scratched the depth because we haven't done any deck construction.
None.
And
we don't have two of the expansions. So.
Right, which are readily available. Yeah. You can still buy cases of them.
One of those is actually a lot more expensive. But
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. The other two are good.
I will say that the support is not so good. There's a few forums out there that, like, you know, have some old posts about it, but this did not, like, as opposed to, like, Star Wars CCG, which is actively ongoing fan development, and they have tournaments and whatnot, this is a dead game in every sense of the word.
Huh.
But, on the other hand, you've got the core release and two expansion packs, which give you 300 to 400 cards of available stuff to pool from.
Yeah, and the combinations there. I mean,
and I kind of like the fact that there is no net decking. You know, the fact that there are no forums saying, this is the deck, you know, this is your proto-Zergrush deck. I mean, that everything that you're doing is your own strategy and your own construction. Net decking is one of my least favorite parts of Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Get behind that.
So I definitely recommend, you know, head to Star City Games or wherever you can find the packs and buy it. Try it out. It gives definitely a graveyard recommendation.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great game. I recommend it wholeheartedly.
Any final thoughts?
Fuck emulators. Almost made him spit his drink.
Indeed. I thought it was just when I thought it was safe to take a drink.
All right. Well, that's it.
I'm Jim Jones.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard. Ciao.